Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. This is not a five-hour episode.
Are you sure?
It's going to be a seven-hour episode.
Shut your...
Oh. We'll see about that.
Aki's here. Purnell is here. Sperry is here. And we've got Bree hanging out on a Tuesday. How's everyone doing?
Great. How are you?
My belly's really full.
Dude, your building's cold.
No, my belly is full.
Oh, that's even better.
And the building is cold.
Yeah. Would you eat?
I made some chicken and cheesy rice with broccoli.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm not full anymore. I want your leftovers.
That's easy. Kind of like what I had, but I put it in a burrito.
Nice.
We had a hamburger helper.
Awesome.
That's what I'm eating tomorrow.
Leftover hot pot.
I'm
mixing broccoli in to get the oil out of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I miss Lean Pockets for that very reason.
Wait, Lean Pockets?
I used to make like a garlic chicken one. It was really good. Right.
I liked the meatball one. It was delicious.
Did they stop making Lean Pockets?
They did.
Probably.
That's stupid.
Well, they were empty calories. It had almost absolutely no nutrition in it whatsoever. But at least it wasn't, 4 pounds of grease into a, 10th of a pound food object.
I like that Hot Pockets are the only thing on the planet that could be both scalding and frozen.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
At the same time.
Yeah. Bite into an ice chunk while the outside is just burning your tongue.
They also got rid of the sleeves, which surprised me.
Yeah, I saw that. They're like, our cooking technology has improved that we no longer need the sleeve. What am I going to wrap it in? Like, I used the sleeve to hold the thing.
That's what I thought was interesting. It's like a part of me that's like, I'm an enviro nut, so yeah, by all means. But the other part of me, so like you said, where am I? I have to eat this off of a plate now? But I guess they're basically telling you, be man up and hold it. Burn your hands. We don't care.
Get gloves, pussy.
I didn't eat it with a knife and a fork like a Philistine, like that guy who eats ribs on Pete and Pete.
I miss that show.
I was going to say, I haven't thought about that show in a long time.
I always think about when I think about the wrong way to eat food. Yeah, because you're a child. You wouldn't know. This is for the adults in the room. I'm kidding. I'm not.
Miss old school Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, salute your shorts. Hey, dude. Welcome, freshman.
Yeah, every once in a while.
Eventually, I'll know one of them, I'm sure.
You shut the hell up.
I know Clarissa, I'm sure. But Clarissa is like a meme for the most part.
Clarissa explains it all. I know that one. I love that show.
Yay.
I used to smoke pot with the guy who played Sam.
Wait,
how random is that? Nice.
So random.
That's awesome.
He went to my high school.
Really?
So basically, he was as chill as he was on that show.
He got fired from the show because he was smoking pot. That's why he left the show.
Clearly seemed like he would smoke pot.
Yeah. Melissa Joan Hart apparently was a real bitch, too, though.
Really?
Yeah. He would complain about her while we got high. Yeah.
Sucks to hear. She was one of those icons in the era where it's like, she seemed like she'd be cool to hang out with, but I guess not.
Yeah.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you got high with Sam from...
Yeah.
Clarissa explains it. That's... How have I not heard that one?
I don't know. It just never came up, man.
Yay!
Retired USAF gamer, thank you for the sub... Enjoy the kitty cats. Enjoy the emotes.
start naming a bunch of old shows you like until Bree goes, oh yeah, 227.
Hey, dude. Disney Afternoon. Disney Afternoon shit.
Well, she couldn't have had smoked weed with Chip and Dale.
What do you know?
Chip and Dale.
Maybe.
Another one I know.
Mr. Coleman, thank you for the sub as well.
There was another... How's everyone doing? Was it Disney... the Mickey Mouse Club kid, like, he didn't go very far. I'm trying to remember what his name was, but like the last time I saw him was on like a, I don't know, cell phone commercial or something. But I didn't like smoke pot with him. He seemed pretty clean cut. I don't know.
Lame.
How many celebrities do you know?
What a loser.
Okay, different question. How many celebrities have you smoked pot with?
Not that many.
You said a president.
That is.
You're about to become like the person who smoked weed with all the hottest celebrities.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
He's like, you might not know this, but I smoked weed with Christopher Lloyd. You didn't even know you smoked weed.
Can't wait to hear like some story that you knew the kid who played like the mystery writer on season 2, a ghost writer or something.
The best grip. One of those titles that as a kid never made sense to me. And like, you're a best grip. What the hell is a best grip? He just holds cards for people. He's really good at it.
I have so many dumb shows on computer I need to watch.
Like what? She might have smoked weed with one of the stars.
I have Aladdin, the complete series, the Disney series.
Oh, the one that had such creative names as Abysmal.
Clone High. That name
was terrible. Clone High was a good show.
Yeah, Clerks the Animated Series. I smoked weed with Gandhi. Who remembers Detention? Because everybody talks about Disney's Recess. Who saw Kids WB Detention?
Nope.
I'm not recalling it hardcore, but I'm sure if I saw like a picture of a character, it would click. In fact, I'm going to look it up right now.
I had one season. It was on Saturday morning. I love that show. And everyone always talks about Recess. Like there was a better one.
Wait, it was live action?
No.
Okay, maybe these images are just... Oh, I see. Here it is. Yeah, the twins look familiar. I'll give it that. But could it also be like the twins from Johnny... The black version of the twins from Johnny Test. So I don't know.
Oh, I know that one, too. All right, cool. We're finally hitting my era.
Well, Johnny,
right,
Johnny Test was the 2000s, yeah, so that's definitely your time.
Well, but we finally got to shit I know.
I did like the Oblongs. That was a weird-ass show, but I appreciate it. Oblongs and
Mission Hill, those are two good
ones. Mission Hill was fantastic. I still quote that show specifically, "Can you crack my back, bitch?" I don't know why. I just loved that scene. It was the dumbest shit. But it stuck with me for years. Pimp needed a chiropractor.
I miss the cable channel Nick Gas because they showed
wasn't that
like,
just all their shows, all their game shows.
Yeah, yeah, they would show like Finders Keepers, Wild and Crazy Kids, Double Dare.
I'll tell you the thing that I don't know anybody that really remembers. Did you ever see the Sega Star Kids Challenge?
No.
Yeah. See, that was a thing. I don't know anybody that really saw that. It was a one-time thing, and it was sponsored by Sega, and they held it at Universal Studios, and it was a game show or a sort of like challenge of sorts where child stars from across like all the popular shows of the time were competing to raise money for their respective charities. So it was like the Step by Step Kids, the Family Matters Kids, people from like Nickelodeon shows.
That
it was ridiculous.
Awesome.
The only thing that annoyed me was that it was the Sega Star Kids Challenge. They only had one event associated with Sega, and it was them trying to play Sonic the Hedgehog. But other than that, it was all like Wild and Crazy Kids-esque shows or like what was that show where like, almost like a children's version of like Great Ninja, like American Ninja Warrior, where like, or that show Wipeout. That's a better description. It's like Wipeout. Like there was like an obstacle course, like bouncing off of things over the water and all kinds of cool stuff. It was pretty
Kids
awesome
American
to watch.
Gladiators.
The Saved by the Bell kids were actually hosing a lot of those people. It was ridiculous. But yeah, if you find it, it may still be entertaining to watch just as a sense of saying, like, oh, I know those child stars. I wonder how well they did here. So that was pretty much what the appeal of it was back then, too. It was like, oh, man, Jaleel White is kicking ass.
Man, you got a game that kind of fit in there later on with Angry Video Game Nerd.
You just tied a nerd to a nerd. Like, wait a minute, I've got no games.
No, retro gaming. They're both retro gaming. Challenge. Like, old school 8-bit gaming. Retro.
It was the one. That was only the one Sonic level, and that was 16-bit.
Whatever.
You were trying.
Did Joe have this? Jeez.
They're both nerds. It counts.
Hold on.
One of them is angry, and the other is not.
For this.
Go fuck yourself.
There we go.
Tangerine balls.
Worth it.
Should we get to reviews? We got a good handful of games we got to talk about tonight, and we don't have too much time with Bree before she's got to go streaming herself. What are you streaming tonight, by the way?
Before Exit Gas Station, and maybe some Power Wash Simulator 2 after that.
Ooh.
I was going to do some other spooky stuff, but we're gonna just do some chill stuff tonight.
Power Wash. I got to play that one.
Yeah.
How is the new one? Is there a good amount to do?
More things to watch? Yeah.
There's like 38 levels, I think, in the game. So there's tons of things to wash. I've barely scratched the surface.
You've barely hosed the surface.
I know, right? I know. Got a copy for Injury for his birthday so that we can play together. And that's what we were doing earlier today. But we both have other things that we needed to work on. So we're hopefully going to get back to that some tonight and the rest of the week. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, you got a handful of games to talk about. You want to kick us off?
Sure. Let's go.
All right. First game tonight is The Lonesome Guild, developed by Tiny Bull Studios, published by Don't Nod, released October 23rd, Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $24.99. The Lonesome Guild is a single-player, top-down action RPG all about togetherness. Embark on a heroic adventure as Ghost, a spirit who wakes to find they hold no memories. The world has become shrouded by loneliness, and the mist just keeps spreading, corrupting everyone in its path. Now it's up to you to get the band back together, even if they're meeting for the first time. Bree, what is The Lonesome Guild?
Well, as you mentioned, this is an epic action RPG filled with lore and cuteness. It's made by an Italian dev team. It starts out with a flash across the sky, a comet, an entity of light in search of something to quell its loneliness. And it turns out a bun named Da Vinci, inventor and scientist, is in search of this comet. But being near the comet brings them feelings of dread, so they must run. And on the way out of the forest, Da Vinci is met by a ghost, or perhaps the spirit of the comet. But we'll just call him Ghost. That's his name now. And that's really the main character of the game. Then while we're trying to escape together, enemies appear and Da Vinci pulls out a giant wrench and then Ghost leaps inside of us because he's like afraid of the fight, I guess. But that's actually one of the key combat things here. So in combat, Ghost will join the character you're controlling or the first available party member. And this is top-down action RPG, kind of like Secret of Mana and stuff like that. And you attack with X and you dodge with B. And it makes sense because to run and roll in the rest of the game, you also use B. During combat, you can also switch characters that have Ghost in them. So if you've got, you know, two or three team members, you can switch between them. And a special meter will fill up for an emblazed period where Ghost and that character will do more damage if they team up. And then there's also a ghost team meter that fills up during longer battles, which unleashes the unite attack between the characters for a huge amount of damage. And it's cute. It's everything about this game is cute. You can make characters wait by pressing X out of combat, which is really helpful during puzzles. And there are a lot of really cool puzzles in this. You can also switch characters with the D-pad. our first introduction to puzzles involves levers. It's a good little tutorial that reminded me a little of some other RPG puzzles, like in Wild Arms, and that wasn't a bad thing. And puzzles are pretty simple to solve. Like, they might involve pulling levers, pushing boxes, or changing symbols on a pillar. They're
Wild Arms is so good. I'm just going to take a second to say that.
I cosplayed the main character of Wild Arms 3 because it's a good series. But yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I have pictures of that somewhere. I'll have to dig them up for you. I still have the costume, too. It's just because I made it all, and it was like an intensive costume. But yeah, there's a live conversation bar on the bottom left of the screen that reminds me a little of chat from things like Tales of Symphonia, which is my favorite Tales game. And the characters offer a little more insight on themselves in the world of Eterre in reaction to the surroundings. Speaking of characters, we have a few on our team. Mr. Fox, I mentioned Da Vinci the Bun, Rantran Trum, Akapibara, Mowin, Chokska, Saren Gallen, oh my gosh, I can't even say these names, which is a witch. each with unique skills and abilities that they bring to the table. Yeah. They all work together to make a team with Ghost. You also have some other fun characters like Babachu the Bird. I actually played enough of this game to have a dream about Babachu.
Oh no, we're getting raided.
Oh no. I'll give it a second.
Welcome in, Javors, and all 31 people you brought with you. That is way too much pressure for us right now. We're we're not in that kind of mood tonight. We are chatting about The Lonesome Guild right now. It is an action adventure RPG style game. Tiny Bull Studios and Don't Nod. Bree, tell us more about this one.
Yeah, so back to the story a little bit. We've realized that the comet has left a red mist behind that's full of this feeling of loneliness and dread. And the only cure we have for it is the friends we find along the way to solving this problem. And in some ways, we achieve title as Da Vinci names our ragtag group the Lonesome Guild. And the title of the game appears cinematically on a screen across the bridge. It was a really cool little moment there. There are rest spots in the game where your progress is saved, your health is restored. You can also talk to your companions at camp to strengthen your relationship level with them, kind of like Clair Obscur Expedition 33. There's a whole relationship rank tree that gives bonus stats between characters. And since Ghost literally joins with your character, that's kind of an important thing to have. Other things I liked about this game were that important names were bold and color-coded in the text. Like, locations were green, and I think people's names were blue. The font was really easy to read and had a good pace to it. The text had a good pace to it. And it waited for you to hit the button to continue, so you could take your time reading. And that was, like, the default settings, which was really good. There's also, like, a really simple leveling system. Your team collects experience points while they're in battle, whether you lead with them or not. And they have some kind of like AI that controls them in battle when they aren't in use. It's a very simple system. And if you don't like how you spent some of your points, you can reset them when you like and start over. Like, it's really user-friendly. Beside the main story, there's also all important side quests. You can help people in need and get more XP and relationship points. The game has adjustable difficulty levels from story mode to hard mode that you can change after starting the game. So you can just change that whenever, which I always appreciate. Let's see. Art. The backgrounds especially reminded me of European comics like Asterix. The character avatar art on the text screen was absolutely darling. The animated 3D models are adorable. It's not bubbly or anime cute, but it's all still cute. And it's got its own style. There are motion cutscenes intermixed throughout the game.
Bree. Would you call the style unique?
Yes.
Fuck you, Joe.
The music was symphonic and uplifting. I half expected to find an airship around the corner at one point. There are things to collect in this. You need to find all the memories, flowers, and ghosts. And after finding the flowers is fun. You have maps you can interact with in each area, and you kind of have to memorize them or screenshot them to see that there are hidden areas available through the bushes and trees that don't look like paths at first. So that was kind of fun trying to find all the secrets. But I guess to sum up a little, I think the various aspects of this game reminded me of a lot of things. But it felt like they created their own world and lore and made something special out of it. I think the Lonesome Guild was filled with nostalgia spot for me, like a nostalgia spot for like classic RPGs that I didn't realize I had. So I mentioned a lot of other games that it was like, oh, this aspect reminds me of this and this aspect reminds me of that. And they still did their own thing. The game is cozy. It has simple combat, a great story about loneliness and friendship. Some aspects of the game feel like they could have been fleshed out a little bit more, like the relationship system, and sometimes combat felt a little repetitive, but it was snappy and fun, and I really like this.
Snappy.
Yep, it was snappy.
All right, you want to talk about price on this one?
Let's do it.
All right, clocks in at $24.99. If you pick it up in the next weekish or so, at least on Xbox, you can grab it for $21.24. Saving some pennies there. $25. What is your verdict on the Lonesome Guild? And the store page says the world might be lonely, hey, kids, but you don't have to be. Is that true?
Yep. That's very true. So yeah, I first saw this and I was like, oh, this looks cute. Like, I'll give it a try. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. So I would say the price is great, and I think it's worth the buy it.
Very good. This one's on my wish list, so I am very happy to hear this one's good.
Awesome.
Next up, Hidden Cats in Spooky Village. Developed and published by the fine folks at Nuke Art Studio, who are crazy enough to keep asking me to have my cats in their game. That's why I'm not reviewing this.
Spoilers.
Because I have hidden cats in this game. This one released October 23rd on Steam for $4.99. I have a fun story to tell about that in a few minutes. But bring light to the darkness as you color each scene by finding over 1,200 hidden objects across 12 levels in the Spooky Village. Discover heroic feline hunters of spooky creatures, collect special cards, unlock bonus levels, and explore haunting yet cozy locations filled with mystery and charm. Again, this one came out October 23rd. I found out this was coming out October 23rd on October 23rd when they emailed me like, hey, we're releasing the game. Could you sign this for your cats?
Huh.
Yeah. Well, and I signed it and sent it, and they're like, hey, the game's on the store. Here's your keys.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, what's your wife's name? We're putting her in the credits too. Awesome. So, Bree, tell me, how many cats are here to find, and did you find mine?
Yeah. So, welcome to another gushing Bree likes hidden cat game segment featuring a spooky theme. Nuke Arts as the developer and Joe's cats invading the game. I guess. Yep. That's where we're at here. But yeah, I love the spooky season and all its tricks and treats, just like in this game. You have several scenes with witches and monsters and bats, and most importantly, hidden cats. I think there's over 1,200 things to find in the game between kittens, special cats, special humans to find. This is my new favorite from Nuke Arts since really? I played. My favorite before that Nuke Arts did was Hidden Cats in Spooky Town, which came out, I believe, last year, or at least it came to Xbox last year, around this time of year. And I just love the spooky theme. I loved the giant, like, pumpkins, and I remember screenshotting them and sending them to my mom as, like, an idea for a base for one of her pumpkins. Plus, Pickle and Petunia, two of Joe's cats, are findable special cats in this game.
Yay!
Similar to Hidden Cats in Tokyo, you can view your cards for your special cats in the main menu. There's also a variety of hidden object scenes. You have a big scene where you can find a ton of cats and special cats, along with some city people as you go. And then the completed bits of the scene color in. And then you have smaller scenes where cats can be hidden in and behind stuff. They'll wiggle to let you know. And then the other style of large scene where you have to find like 100 special people. And I think it was only like 50 people in this one, though. But you can only find them like so many at a time. And then, and that style is a little time consuming, but I think there was only one level of that. And I'm trying to remember as I go here. But yeah, when you play the first main scene, you find special cats like Pickle and Petunia, and they unlock other scenes like Nosferatu's castle and the mausoleum, respectively. There are 11 bonus levels, like the Witch's Market and the Crypt. I actually felt like the challenge level on finding some of the cats was harder in the opening scene than I was used to, which was not a bad thing at all, because I think I've played so many of these now, it was nice to feel a little extra challenge. It has a fun, spooky soundtrack. There's dark mode, color blindness settings, and mouse sensitivity settings to make the game to your liking. Didn't Aki also play this?
Yes.
What
are your thoughts on this?
Was this your first one?
Yes, it was.
And what did you think?
I liked it. I especially liked the first level because as you're filling out the first level, when you get all the cats in a section, it colors it in. Which made it really easy to determine, oh, I finished this section.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look around for the other ones in this other section. And that's the only level it does it in, which drove me crazy.
Yeah, the other levels are a lot smaller, though. There's that one that's a different style, that's a bigger level, but yeah.
Yeah, so I really liked it, but I would have liked if they all got colored in, just because that would have made it so much easier for me to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I thought it was super cute.
Yeah.
Brunel, did you get to play this one at all or no?
Whole series.
Brunel, did you get to play this one at all or no?
Sorry, I was over here playing games. No, I did not get a chance to
play that
one, unfortunately. I know.
Oh, you have to play this one and find my cats.
I just may have to.
The cats are hidden, Brunel. You got to find them.
Will I get the high score if I do?
Maybe. No. Gotta beat Breeze time, I guess. I don't know. Who beat it faster?
Probably Aki.
I beat it that same night, so I have a feeling I probably beat it fast instead of us all.
Yeah. I did it in stages.
I did first level,
and then I did others after, like in chunks.
Oh, yeah, I just played Aki with 5.7 hours. Bree with 5.2.
Hmm.
But has Bree 100%ed it yet?
I have not. I have to go back and do
okay, one Aki of them wins.
That I didn't get. I did with the hint. I accidentally hit the hint button.
Oh, and ruined
one of the achievements. Oh. Yep.
I win through technicality. Woot.
Yep.
You're just lucky this isn't the Xbox version, or she would have 1K'd it like 20 minutes after she got the code.
But hey, and exciting, it'll eventually also hopefully be coming to Xbox and I can play it again. And that's awesome. Because it's Spooky Village and it's my favorite.
Well, from Spooky Town to Spooky Village, this is $5. If you pick it up before the 6th on Steam, it is $3.99, so you could save $1. But for $5, full price, I know they're asking a lot for the...
How much?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's an expensive.
What do you think of $5?
I love the spooky theme. I'm not sick of these games yet. I still want more. Buy it.
I'm totally down for it. I thought it was a cute game. I say go buy it.
Cool. And thank you again to Nukearts for not only hooking us up with the keys for the game, but again for putting my adorable kitties.
I have two adorable kitties you can put in the game next time.
Yeah, she does.
Their names are Cheek and Dearham, and they're already in your Discord.
There you go. Next up, Escape Simulator 2, developed and published by Pine Studio, released October 27th on Steam for $19.99. Sequel to the best-selling escape room game, brings a fresh take on the first-person puzzles, with a variety of new rooms to explore solo or with friends. Solve intricate puzzles, uncover hidden secrets, or craft your own escape rooms with Room Editor 2.0. Aki, Bree, both of you cover this. Who wants to start?
Okay. So in this you get to make your own character. It has two different genders, three different outfits, a whole bunch of different hairstyles and skin colors and hair colors and a few eye colors. And each one of these colors are different, I think, depending on what hairstyle you have. So, you know.
Yeah, we chose the same purple and our hair came out differently.
Very, very differently.
Interesting.
One was mine a maroon, bright purple.
Yep.
And we both wanted the other's color.
Yeah, we wanted the other color. It was. I've had both those hair colors in real life, and I was like, oh, I want that one.
Yeah, the maroon one looked more realistic, so I wanted that. But
yeah, well, that's what I normally like do is I overdye. I overdye with burgundy on my brown hair, and it gives me that burgundy color.
I'm guessing based on the hair situation, Jacob developed this game.
And you get to make your own character, and then you get to figure out how to get into a level. It's through a portal, just in case you're wondering. And you get to choose which of three different locations you go to. The first one is Dracula's castle. The next one is a spaceship. And the last one is a pirate's pub area place thing. Each area has four levels that you can play, and you can either just continue right on to the next level, or you can go back to the lobby area and choose which of the three places you want in any level you have unlocked. Bree and I both played, I think, two levels of the first two, and then I think only the first level of the last one.
Yeah.
And, Bree liked the pirate one. I liked the standard one. Neither of us enjoyed the space one as much. Some of these puzzles were hard. I thought the easiest ones were in Dracula's castle, and the hardest ones were in the spaceship, and that just irked me because I don't like it to be too hard. I want to just get through it because I'm a dumb bitch. And yeah, you get to pick up things. Not everything you get to pick up is useful. You can stash it all into your inventory. It has infinite room, and you can pick up just about everything and add it to your inventory. You can break stuff in some levels. There are pots and stuff, and you can break those and put each of the pieces in your inventory.
Yeah, but the good news is that important stuff makes a sound.
Yes, it makes it very useful. However, I don't think it makes a sound every time you pick it up, so you kind of need to place it off to the side and make sure not to pick it back up again and throw it away, and throw everything else the fuck away so you don't interact with shit that isn't useful.
A nice addition.
Yes, especially after I started knocking stuff off of things pots. When I first realized I could break pots, and I broke all of them. The puzzles are all over the place in the levels. Even difficulty-wise, they're kind of all over the place. Some of them are really simple. Some of them are kind of confusing. There's not a lot of hints on all of them, even. Like, one we had in the Dracula's castle was like, oh, the angel faces the demon's door, and the demon stands to the right of her and face it and always looks to the heavens. And from that, we had to solve a puzzle of where to put them on a chessboard. And I figured it out after a little bit, but it was not super easy to figure out immediately.
Yeah, I think about the time you solved the puzzle was when I realized which door was which based on, like, other environmental clues. So, yeah.
Yeah, you have to look high and low for shit.
Oh, absolutely.
Matter of fact, in that same level, there was an item that you could pick up and use, and it basically gave you a bird's eye view instead of first person view. And with that, you were able to see symbols that lit up in different areas around the place that was used for a different puzzle. So it's very clearly focused on, hey, two people should probably be playing this game, if not more. You can do it all solo still. After all, Bri and I had a tendency to split puzzles between the two of us and just work on what we could.
I have two comments on that, though. And one is that I was really impressed that you could have two people working on a puzzle at once and you could see each other interact with it. That was really
not cool. All the puzzles allowed you to do that, though.
Yeah, and I would say sad. That some of the puzzles felt like they were designed to only be in a multiplayer setting.
Yeah, the game is playable with up to 8 players.
Yeah.
You can get a big group together on this one.
Yeah, there was one puzzle in Dracula's castle, I think the second level, where we opened the fireplace and I went inside and then I got trapped in there. And the only way to solve the puzzle was to have someone tell you what was on the painting outside.
Yeah, and then not long after that, I got trapped in I don't know where. And
oh, yeah.
We had to solve another turn puzzle where it's like 3 tiers of stuff that you rotate around and get them to line up a picture. And yeah. From that, I got extra information that I had to relay to Bree so she could equip different things onto statues. I don't know how you're supposed to do any of that single player. So yeah. I'm kind of wondering if they changed some of the puzzles up if you're playing a single player.
Yeah.
Which would be a whole hell of a lot more work, which is crazy, but cool.
Yeah, it says the game is designed for both solo play and multiplayer, so I would imagine it's something that scales the puzzles based on how many people are there.
I definitely noticed some puzzles where you could easily, it was definitely going to be scaled. For instance, ironically, in the exact same area that we've been referencing, at the very beginning, you're locked into a chair at a dinner table by the neck. And if you look around, you can actually see empty chairs where other players would be sitting. We were across from each other and couldn't really see each other all that well.
Because there was a giant lazy cake. Susan in the middle, and you can put stuff on it to pass to each other that you could all reach.
Nice. Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah.
I would spin it. Could you just spin it for as long as you want?
Yeah. Yeah. I may have done that when I got bored while she was solving a puzzle.
My mom would kick the shit out of me if I said that. She had one on her table all through my childhood, and I would just spin it as I sat at the table. She would get so pissed. She's like, stop spinning the goddamn lazy Susan. Nope. In $20, what do you two think of Escape Simulator 2?
Bree, you go first. I'm still thinking.
I have a couple other comments. So you can also create levels that I didn't bother with because it didn't interest me.
Same here.
The timer felt a little steep on the first level, but we got it with like 2 minutes to spare. And then we found out in a later level, the timer apparently doesn't matter. Like, it's just a suggestion. So that was weird. I don't know if there's like achievements for getting it under a certain time or whatever. While you're waiting in the lobby, there were other puzzles you could do with no timer. There's zero controller support. Which sucks a little from the perspective of it things being timed, but I get used to keyboard and mouse quick. I only fumbled with the keys a little. Graphically, it was reasonably well done, but I got too close to Aki and it caused her hair to disappear, and then she was bald, and it was weird.
I did know that. That's funny.
Yeah. Some of the audio mix was weird for me, too. The footsteps were, like, too loud, and sometimes the music would get too loud, like, randomly. And we did run into like one crash. I don't know if it was on the host end or what, because I think it was like Aki was frustrated for a little bit with that. But after that, it seemed fine. So I don't know if it was just we had a memory.
We were in a level for long. A really long time, and I was working on one specific puzzle, and we had basically been stuck on that puzzle. We were stuck on that for over 20 minutes on this one singular puzzle. Yeah. And eventually it started, it was one where you had to basically cut out words out of a whole bunch of different audio messages to get it to say a password, and constantly editing, deleting, trying to get that because they did not match with where the word was actually written under it, which is fucking annoying. It started to chug really bad for me out of nowhere, and the more I fiddled with it, the worse it got, until eventually I think the game just crashed. I think there might be a memory leak issue with the game.
But I had a good time with it. I think the price is good. I know that in the first game, they supported it with DLC and extra things, and they've already had some patches since day one, so I know they're supporting the game. I think that this will have new content in the future. Like, I could give it a buy it.
I think they need to make some changes to it to, you know, fix some issues like the memory leak issue that crashed me. But otherwise, I think it's a great game. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to beating it with Bree at some point. So yeah,
hopefully this weekend we can find some more time.
Hopefully. But yeah, I'm totally for it. I think it's a buy it.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Bree, that's it for you. We'll let you get going so you could go power wash some things.
Yeah, I'm gonna look for anomalies in a gas station first, but yeah, have some fun, and I'll be talking about that next week.
You got any final words before we let you go?
No, my brain is so fried. I got no words.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna just bail.
Hey, bye.
Bye.
Next up, Angry Video Game Nerd 8-Bit, developed by Retroware Programmancer and Megacat Studios, published by Retroware, released October 23rd, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. This all-new action platformer, heavily inspired by the classic side-scrollers like Mega Man, throws you into the angry video game nerd universe as the nerd himself blasts your way through pixel art levels ripped straight from the nerd's nightmarish video game collection. They're crawling with zombies, mechanical skeletons, ghoulish reapers, and more. For now, what is going on in Angry Video Game Nerd 8-Bit?
Well, the game initially starts off with a bit of a mini episode of the actual Angry Video Game Nerd show, which sets the stage for the game of what you are experiencing here. What takes place is that Super Mega Death Christ, which is a character I must have fallen out by then, but I don't remember that guy. But basically, he shows up while the nerd's trying to play what he considers to be a fun game and pretty much ruins his day by taking over his Nintendo and using it to pretty much ruin gaming across the world. So in an act of hero tude and awful a general desire to save gaming because he likes gaming, he sets it up so that he can himself go into the Nintendo by way of playing the game itself and defeating the six bosses that are basically running it so that he can cause the game to glitch out and then for beat the actual enemy himself. Though these characters are actually inspired by aspects of the Angry Video Game Nerd universe, whether it be like specific characters that were featured on the shows or sort of just like bastardized versions of actual characters or environments from the games. For example, like I thought was pretty that one of the levels that are referenced in here is based off of the game Fester's Quest, because of course anybody who's played an NES game back in the day knows how frustrating that game was. And then there's other levels, like there's a Pepsi Man theme level, and there's another level, which is just like a Sky World, but the boss is the actual ship from Top Gun. So it's, if you know about retro NES games and how frustrating they can be, and if you're familiar with the Angry Video Game Nerd, there's a lot of actual references and whatnot to clock here. But what is the game itself and what does it play like? Well, as you mentioned earlier in your description, it takes the inspiration from Mega Man in that you start out with a stage select screen, six different bosses, six different levels. You choose the level you want to go to, and bam, you're touched down and ready to kick ass and take names. Side-scrolling game where the nerd has the ability to jump, slide, and fire his gun. Again, think like Mega Man. Enemies are trying to prevent him from getting to the end of the stages, so blast the crap out of them to kick them out of order, and then press on. As you play through a level, you will gain access to various power-ups, such as, like, Molotov cocktails, which are essentially beers, or the F-bomb, which is a screen clear, or... Oh, God. And there's, like, the middle finger, which is essentially, like an invincibility. There's a couple of, like, nice little items you can get in the game as you play through levels. You can also get gun power-ups, think Blaster Master, in that each time you pick one up, your gun that you fire will get stronger and stronger until it becomes a pretty broken mess of a gun. Literally, I love the final charge version of the gun. Though, also like Blaster Master, if you take a hit, your gun will downgrade one level. Though, I have not played this game on the hardest difficulty because of review purposes. I do know that at least on normal difficulty, when you drop a piece, when you get hit and you lose a gun level, it does drop onto the ground and you have a few seconds to pick it up and maintain your level. So it's not just, oh, damn, I'm out of luck here or whatever, which is very handy when it comes to boss fights, because it's funny how some of the bosses, just like I guess how some of the levels are, some of them are pretty straightforward and easy, and others might make you want to pull your hair out because they're just kind of dicks. But admittedly, everything in this game, I do feel, at least on normal difficulty, is surmountable by an average player who just wants to play a good platformer. Now, if you want a game where the game is handed to you, maybe the baby mode that's on here is fine, whatever. But normal, I think you need to at least be willing to die a few times and get the handle of things. But it's not NES hard or whatever. Maybe hardest balls mode will do that to you. Maybe I'll find that out later. Once you beat the 6 levels, you unlock the final level of the game, in which case you can blast through it, kick ass, take names, and wrap it up. I do like that in between every couple stages, so you'll get a quick snippet of the nerd kind of encouraging you to keep playing the game. It's like, 2 levels down, 4 to go, we got this, baby, like stuff like that. And I do enjoy the run-and-gun platforming of this game. If the other earlier games he has are like that, I might have to go back and play those too, because it is genuinely a good time to run through this game. In fact, the only real negative I have, and it's not a negative so much as it's a preferential wish, is that I wish they leaned harder on Mega Man and actually let you earn things by beating the levels in the game. It sets itself up to do it so perfectly, and then it doesn't. Even the passwords in this game are the Ball Mega Man 2 inspired password system. So they did a really good job with this. The music slaps. I can totally see myself listening to this music outside of the game. It's very good music. And it hits all the right notes. I will say, if you are not a fan of gross out humor, you might not be as fond of this game as anybody else, or at least maybe you want to skip the intro, because I think he does like summon his super cartridge to get into the system by like shitting into a bowl, into a cup, and then pouring it into like a pentagram. But again, if you are in any way familiar with the Angry Video Game Nerd, none of that should surprise you, and none of it should freak you out. But that was for people who are like, what is this nerd thing, and why is he so angry? All in all, though, I think this game is a legit good time. It was a lot of fun to play. I could totally see myself playing it again here and there, like one of those like annual anniversary type hits or whatever. It's just worth it. It's a good time. And if they were to ever revisit this, I would like to see them do something more akin to like Mega Man with actual gaining abilities, or even making it sort of a Metroid-esque thing where he's like running through like the video game verse or something. That would be awesome too. But as it stands, this game is solid and worth your time to play.
All right. Well, it is a $20 game. If you're interested in the first release, Angry Video Game Nerd 1 and 2 Deluxe is on Steam for $10. But this one, new one, $20. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a buy. A lot of fun and worth your time.
Very good. Any other thoughts?
It is very good. Ass. There you go.
All right. Next up, Roulette Hero, developed by CLLC Studio, published by Spiral Up Games, released October 24th on Steam for $9.99. Roulette Hero is a strategic roguelike deck builder where you assemble animal companions to defeat towering mechanical beasts. Line up the perfect squad on your roulette wheel, spin to activate your animal abilities, trigger game-changing synergies, and turn the tide of battle. Andy, I had to like look at the Steam page to make sure I was reading the correct description. What is going on in Roulette Hero?
Dude, as I always say, this is Andy, and that is exactly what the game is all about. You nailed it. I don't know, man. I was like a little skeptical at first when I first got this one, because I feel like a lot of these games are like maybe cashing in on this whole like, I don't know, gambling vibe that we've got going on lately, which is not a bad thing, you know, like it kind of trends, you know, everybody was into Vampire Survivors and started making Survivor like games, you know,
yeah.
And now it seems like everybody's making like gambling Survivor games. I don't know. but I don't know. I got kind of a vibe somewhere in between, I would say, like Pokemon-ish, like, or just like a monster battler, you know, collecting little monsters to fight for you. And then obviously like the slot machine, like vibes from Clover Pit, but with like way less death to it, you know? There's like a little deck building style mechanics in there too. I don't know, a lot of robot vibes, because the whole thing is based around robots. But basically it's you robot versus another robot. And in order to battle, the whole game's about like battling these robots or deal damage. You need little characters on your roulette wheel. And so there's 16 spaces total around your roulette table. And you need to fill those spaces with all types of characters that like combo well together and deal massive damage or heal you or boost your defense or, you know, just take out your opponent. So you're going through, it's like level to level. So there's 8 different difficulties. And then in those 8 difficulties, there's 8 levels. So quick math, 64 levels. As you continue, you get stronger, hopefully, and your enemies get stronger as well, too. You either win and move on to the next difficulty, or you lose and try again. If you win, though, it's cool because in between each little... So it's like set up like you versus one enemy, you know, and they have... anywhere from like 4 health up to like 1500 health. Like it just progresses as you go. But so it's you versus the enemy. If you win, then you move on to the next enemy. But in between there, you get these little upgrade cartridges that will help boost your overall health or defense or add extra rolls or so your characters will be stronger or whatever it is, you know. So there's like a little bit of roguelike mechanics in there as well, too. Yeah, and then winning all 8 rounds sends you off to the next higher difficulty. Also adds like a bonus condition to the gameplay as well, too. There's custom game modes. There's an all-map challenge mode where you fight all the bosses. There's all kinds of stuff in this one. There's a lot more than I originally expected when I first jumped into it. But get back to the basics. So you start off at the beginning with like 4 squares unlocked on your wheel. Each of those 4 squares has a coin in it. Coins are super important because like you need them to take another turn. You got to use them to buy animal companions. You can use them to refresh the shop where you buy those animal companions too. And then each time you spin, there's a little light indicator that kind of rolls around, lands on an open space, or depending on how you set it up, will land on multiple spaces too. So, for example, if it lands on a coin, then you get a coin. If it lands on an animal, depending on the animal's ability, which I'll get into in a second, it'll do the ability thing that it has or also attack or do something else, you know. Each animal starts off with level 1. So everything that you're basically setting in your roulette table, roulette wheel, you know, space, starts off at level 1. Everything can be upgraded to level 3, though. And you do that by combining similar types of the animal or item or whatever it is together. So you can get animals, you can get coins, you can get chests, you can get all kinds of stuff. Some will stick around. Some will disappear. Some have abilities.
Does it have a fishing mini game?
It does not have a fishing mini game. I wish it did. That would take this game from an 8 to a 10 easy, dude. but yeah, it does have fish in it, though. There's lots of fish are one of the animals that you can get. So, you know, I guess in a roundabout way, it's kind of a fish-based mini game. I don't know. Not really.
Works for me.
Anyway. Well, yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, combining all the animals or items together, you know, increases the overall stats or abilities, or like if there's a timer on something where it's like every this many rounds this happens, or there's like a 5% chance this will happen, it'll like increase that as well. So that's kind of nice. Talking about the animals, I did mention the fish. There are 13 different animal types in total, which is absolutely insane once you get into it. There's cats, which I think you start off with cats. You can either start off with cats or dogs. You start off with cats. That's right. So if you like cats, you get cats right at the beginning, you know. There's also bugs, dogs, birds, fish. There's legendary creatures. I think there's other robots too. There's a lot of them. And you slowly go through, and as you complete difficulties, you unlock more and more and stuff. There's a lot of combinations you can set up with each of these too. And then each kind of like, I would say like group of animals, like all the cats kind of like synergize together, you know, or like all the bugs will like synergize together, you know? So, it's easy at first to kind of like make up these like groupings so that you can really like focus on like, I want all these cats, and the cats will, like add more attack power if certain things are going on, or, you know, this or this happens. But then it gets a little hectic because you have so many other animal types that are coming in too. And you're like, well, I want cats, but the cats respond differently than like birds do, you know, and birds need to like boost other birds. Or, for example, there's like, I know I'm like kind of bouncing all over the place on this review a little bit, and I'm sorry, but there's like a lot more to this than I realized when I was first starting to play it. So let me give you like an example. So, like some will have abilities where, if X happens, then you gain more attack power, or, if like multiple cats are like, kind of signaled on the same run, it'll add to their defense or their attack power together. There's one character called the Legendary Eagle or King Eagle that will actually consume a bird that you have in your standby row, making it stronger. There is a shark, like a legendary shark, that it'll do kind of the same thing, but it'll consume a fish that is next to it to do like another roll and deal like twice as much damage. There's an owl that will boost the attack power of other owls like on your little roulette wheel. So it's really about like finding these synergies, you know, so you can get like maximum damage. I had that eagle that I was just talking about. I had two of them in my roulette wheel, and they were each doing like 150 damage, which was pretty good. That's buku damage. Some will heal you, some will give you defense, all kinds of stuff. So, but like I said, there's so many that I felt like maybe it could be like a little bit of a problem. Like if you're really trying to go for one like synergized run, then it's much more difficult to get only cats or only birds or only dogs or whatever it is you're trying to go for. But I guess that kind of adds to the gameplay too a little bit. Like it's a bad thing, but also a good thing. So you're not stuck in one style, but, essentially you're just spinning, you're snagging combos, you're gaining coins, you're kicking robot butts, you know, pretty much the usual games I play. Like I said, I was a little skeptical at first. I really like it though. All the animal types, everything's like kind of hand drawn graphic style too, you know, which is really cute. Yeah, art. If I could speak tonight, dude, I don't know what's wrong with me. I was like, it's just like such a long day. I'm one of the tired few SML podcasters tonight. But the artwork is great. The music is awesome too. I mean, it scratches the gambling itch. It's got, you know, all the buzzes and bells and whistles that you would expect to it too. And it's just fun. It combines a lot of elements, but it's really fun. I liked it.
Very cool. Well, it is right now $10 on Steam. Get it before the 6th, you could get it for $9. But for $9.99, what is your verdict on Roulette Hero?
I feel like $10 is a good game price point, like in general. Like I'd get this for $10 for sure. Easy.
Sweet. Next up, Concubine, developed and published by Upgrade Entertainment, released October 13th. Steam Early Access for $14.99. a sensual dark fantasy hack and slash ARPG. Sensual, not sexual. This is not After Dark. Fully customize an attractive concubine and up to 3 female companions with deep cosmetic details. Be the private assassin of the Sultan and earn sexy outfits, powerful weapons, and mystic skills. Design and customize your harem base at the Grand Palace. Aki, how sad are you that this is not an After Dark segment?
So incredibly so. That would have been fantastic. No. Had to make it not pornography.
To make it tasteful.
No such thing as tasteful. It's just, it should just be pornographic. That's where it should stay.
Well, it's not. Better. So deal with it. What is this game?
And this, you play as a concubine. Basically, you are one of the various wives of the Sultan of this area. Except for you're not a normal one. No, no, no. You're a super secret kill everything that moves type. You are one of his elites, and you're sent out to go and kill his enemies at night while blending into his harem during the day. And yeah, you basically go, you're introduced to him, and his mother is the one who hires you. And they're like, yeah, you have your quarters here. You got a secret pathway through there, and you can go talk to the people, get your weapons and armor and all that fun stuff. And you can start going and killing people for us. Cool, cool. Okay, get the fuck out of my sight now. great fun. And then you go and you interact with the various people. They give you some crap. And I emphasize that it is crap. Because like all the weapons that I've been able to manage to get from the weaponsmith down in the basement is wooden stuff. Which is not super useful when you're trying to kill a whole bunch of bandits. You know, a wood sword is just not quite where it needs to be at, you know? It's just, need a little clunk. Bit more stabby and slashy than wood can provide, I'm afraid. And yeah, you get
wood.
You get some starting gear and stuff, and then you're told, hey, yeah, go into the map and go kill these people. And you go there, and if you're trying to do this with melee weapons, you die. And then you try again, and until you understand that you need to just use your arrow and only your bow and arrow, you're going to keep dying like a dumb fuck. So congratulations. Get good, scrub.
Did you die like a dumb fuck?
Oh, yeah. I died once, and I was like, okay, I will try ranged. And ranged is where it's at. That's just used ranged. It is so much better. You end up picking up weapons off of dead people, coins, bits of armor, what have you. For some reason, you're mostly killing guys, and somehow you keep finding bits of women's armor. But, you know, hey, I guess, whatever floats their boat, they can wear whatever they want under their big heavy armor, I guess. it's fine with me. And yeah, that's realistically all you do in this is you just go into the map, clear out a section, go into the map, clear it out, and you just keep leveling up. Every time you level up, you get a point that you can toss into one of your little stat areas, be it intellect, agility, strength, wisdom, dex, vitality. Each one gives you a little bonus to different things, like obviously vitality is your health, but then your dex is like, it gives you more stamina so you can run more and swing your melee weapons more. You get increased range damage, better chance at a critical strike, and that's just from one stat, from dex. So you can really figure out just how you want to build your character, and the answer is just dump everything into dex and use a bow and arrow, because that's the only way you're going to survive. at least I'm honest about it. And yeah, You have both a actual armor outfit that you wear, as well as a costume that is basically your transmog system. You equip whatever you want to the costume, and that's what the character looks like. And you can flip it off so that you see the armor and only the armor if you want, so on and so forth. It doesn't appear like the stats, if you put it into the costume, that the stats on that armor go towards your character, so that's a shame, especially if you're like, oh, this one piece of armor, I like the look of it, but its stats aren't as good, and all the rest of the armor that I have, I like the look of, and their stats are good. So now I can either equip the costume with this piece of armor that looks cool, and the rest of it looks like shit, or they're going to have the one piece that doesn't match anything else because it has better stats. So I would prefer if they actually had just a proper transmog system in here. That way you could just equip the strongest stuff and make it all look however you want. But that's a quality of life thing. It is what it is. There isn't a ton of story in this, realistically. You just go from mission to mission, and lots of the missions are side stories, so you can level up and obtain better weapons and armor so that you can reach the level and the capacity to actually fight in the main levels. So, sadly,
here's a question you can answer. How are the jiggle physics?
They are fucking amazing. Like, you don't understand. They're amazing. Also, I guess I should point out, whilst this isn't an After Dark one because there's no naughty in it, there is nudity. Like, you can take off your character's clothes and they are naked under it, just straight up.
I mean, you can do that in Cyberpunk.
This is true.
You could do that in Conan. This is very true.
I would consider Conan an adult game, personally, but...
That's rated M. Not AO.
Well, you know, that's a shame. That's all I have for that. I haven't really fiddled around with, you know, the extra characters. You have to buy their rooms and stuff to unlock them, and they cost a lot of money. And I'm just like, I can just use a bow and kill things on my own. I don't need other people. I'm better than that. I have all the jiggle physics that I need. I'm good. The others will just distract me.
All right. Well, this is a $15 game in Steam Early Access. What do you think? Should people jump on this now? Should they wishlist it? Should they follow it? Should they ignore it? Give us all your thoughts.
I think if any of this sounded interesting to you, definitely wishlist it and keep an eye on it. If it doesn't, this is a passable game. This is, when this gets a full release, if it's improved a lot, I think it'll be worth it. But if it ends up playing very much like it does now, it's going to be kind of one of those, and I'd be like, try it at best. So I think it's worth keeping your eyes on it just to see if it gets better at the very least.
All right. Any other thoughts on it?
I like the jiggle physics, because anytime you move, they go flying. It's insane.
SML After Dark.
Yeah.
Fucking yeah! I don't remember saying that.
Next up, Command Deck, developed and published by K-Critical. Released September 24th, Steam Early Access for $14.99. Sci-fi roguelike deck builder where you explore the galaxy, face hostile aliens, and upgrade your starship. It will take adaptability and strategic thinking to survive and uncover the secret your enemies want to keep hidden. For now, what kind of secrets are you keeping, bud? What's going on here?
I'm a secret space pilot, Captain.
Oh, so, no!
Just leave. What a secret. So... This game is, at its core, basically a deck builder, a roguelike deck builder, where you are traversing a node-based map that exists within space, tackling various ships and random events, eventually trying to get to the final map, which involves, well, you'll get there when you get there. But the actual gameplay of it is that at the beginning of the game, you have a ship called the Peregrine. You choose a captain to man that ship. And each captain that's available to you has various perks that come along with them. I chose the one that just gives me a bonus action every turn, because who the hell doesn't want bonus actions on a turn, a roguelike deck builder? So basically, once you do that, you have a sort of base set of cards that are in your deck. And as you play through the game, you'll acquire more. But the deck itself is purely used for combat. Combat against what? Well, opposing ships. Because on various nodes, whether by way of you seeing the ship on the map, with the game also telling you the difficulty level of the ship you're combating, or a scenario where the ship might be massed in a nebula field that disrupts your sensor system to tell what's out there, you will engage in combat with these ships. Each ship in the game has its own deck of cards. Admittedly, I don't know, because I've not delved that deep into it, I don't know if each ship has a specialized deck, as in every time you see an escort cruiser, will the escort cruiser have that specific deck every time? That I don't know. But just know that every ship that you battle against, every battle being a 1v1, has its own deck of cards. And that deck of cards, just like you, represents the action that you can take. Cards come in a variety of different functions, but the primary ones are weaponry, which is you can fire one or more blasts at enemies. There might be missiles you can fire that can bypass your shields or bypass the enemy's shield to do some quick damage if you need to chip at them. And their shield card lets you bump up and build yourself up to be defensive so you can absorb damage. There's drones you can summon and EMPs you can drop and other sorts of things too. But for the most part, just know as you play the game, you will get various types of attack and defense and ability cards to make up your deck. Unlike a lot of deck builders, though, the cards in this game don't have an actual cost to play. Every card is one action point. So what that means is that you could very well end up with a pretty busted set of cards that you can play, because again, you don't have to think, well, I have this card that will generate 6 shield for me, which is pretty good, but it's going to cost me my entire pool of action points. Not in this game, it's one action point, and you're going to exploit the crap out of it. But knowing that, that might determine, how you feel about certain aspects of the game. But just know every card is a single action point, and depending on the loadout of your ship, you could have quite a few of those. When you defeat enemies, you'll gain access to get the ability to get another card to add to your deck, or should you decide not to do that, you can get bonus currency on top of the currency you earn from defeating the enemies. Currency can be spent at various ship merchants you can find out in space, or scenarios where a special event might require you to invest in something for a result that you might want. And for the most part, that is the game. Sometimes you will come across scenarios, though, that are specialized. Like, you might come across a ship that's also in an asteroid field, which means every couple of turns, you're going to be pelted with asteroids, so you might want to get those shields up before the asteroid belt comes, the asteroid shower hits. And it affects your opponent, too, which is good. This is an early access game, though, which makes me wonder what they intended to add to it, because the game could certainly use more. But while saying that, I can also admit that with the bit that's here right now, they have a solid foundation in place, which means they can only go up from here. I look forward to seeing what they do with this. In fact, one thing I didn't even mention that I think is kind of nice about this game is that there's an actual evasion stat, too. I'm not going to go so far to say evasion is a rare or unique thing in this genre, but I do like that the evasion stat is front and center, and you can play cards that will affect it, both for you or your opponent, and they can do the same, of course. And you can watch that stat go up and down to give you a better chance of understanding, okay, what are the odds of me dodging a barrage of 6 lasers that this guy's going to shoot at me? Oh, I bumped up my evasion by 20%. I feel a little confident about that. This is nice. I think the game is good, and I look forward to seeing where they go with it in the future.
All right. Well, for the future, they plan to be in early access for 9 to 12 months. That is their plan. They plan to include additional starting ships, more cards and augments, new officers, enemy factions, mechanics, encounters, greater sector variety. That is, and expanded story elements.
Think of a sector as a map. So it might involve new and like more types of events to show up on the map, or better choices that you have to make while out and about. It could be anything related to like the map construction.
Gotcha. And I gotta call this line out. Current content: 40 plus unique enemies, each with their own unique card decks. Oh, 2-in-1 bullet point. For now, this clocks in at $15 in early access. Should people follow this, ignore it, wish list it, pick it up? What do you think people should do with their $15?
Well, if you're not one to do early access, this game's not going to change your mind. But if you are okay with the idea of buying a game that is already fun to start and there's a promise of something greater to come, or potential for something greater to come, I think this is worth a buy it right now. It's fun.
Very good. Next up, Bloodshed, developed by COM8 COM1 Software, published by Head Up, released October 23rd, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, $12.99. Bloodshed is an exhilarating fusion of roguelite elements merged with retro-style visuals, first-person survivors-like frenetic combat action. That's a lot of mixing of elements. Face endless waves of undead foes, collect experience points, and upgrade your skills and weapons in a battle to survive the night. Even after death, you keep your hard-earned money, which can be exchanged for persistent improvements and unlockable content, allowing you to progress further while adding depth to the overall gameplay. Andy, tell us about your time with Bloodshed.
Hey, everybody, it's me again. I'm back.
Yay, welcome back. We missed you.
Yay! I know you missed me. That was my Purnell impression.
That's a Jacob.
Oh, is it Jacob? Damn it. That's my Jacob impression.
Yeah.
Well, now you got to make one. You got to do one.
I don't know what Andy to do now.
Yay!
Oh, yeah.
Yay! Fucking yeah!
There we go.
Got to do that one, too.
Fucking yeah! Oh, my God!
I'm sold.
Dude, I'll just be one of these days. I'll just be in here and I'll do everybody, and I'll pretend I'm everyone doing their reviews.
Andy's over here, like, I'll fucking kill you. Right, Andy, what is Bloodshed?
Oh yeah. Bloodshed. That's right. We got a game to talk about. I would say Bloodshed is like what you would get if Doom and Vampire Survivors had a baby. Which is kind of cute.
Sold.
Old.
That's easy.
I actually, you know what's funny? Yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know. Maybe I'm just playing too many games lately that I see these games and I'm like, oh yeah, I know it's like this and this, you know. So if you guys have played either of those, you'll know what you got going on to. I actually reviewed another game, and I think Purnell might have reviewed it as well too, called Vampire Hunters. Does that sound familiar?
I'm gonna find out.
I feel like I know. I think I did like the early access for it, and somebody else reviewed like the full game of it too. Mm. But anyway, I saw that one like as soon as I saw this one too, and I was like, oh, they got kind of a similar vibe, you know, not exactly the same, but that one has a lot more guns. But anyway, Bloodshed. Bloodshed is basically like a first-person shooter set in a closed map or environment where you're...
The guns, yes. I did review that.
Yeah, the guns. Yeah, guns and demons, dude. That one was really
lots
good, too.
Lots of guns.
Lots of guns, dude. Yeah, yeah. I kind of want to go back to that one, too. That one's cool. But yeah, this one, Bloodshed, right? You kill demons, skeletons, evil wizards, and such like that too. Fish people, they drop little orbs, which you can pick up to gain levels. In classic roguelite fashion, you gain new weapons, armor, upgrades, upgrades to stats as well, or upgrades to weapons. Pretty much whatever your heart desires. It's like I said, I mean, it's a 3D Doom like Vampire Survivors. I mean, each round lasts anywhere from 5 minutes to 20 minutes. Chock full of running and gunning, lots of enemies, just hordes of enemies that are constantly spawning all the time forever. You get everything from just normal little like nerd enemies to like elite baddies, you know, and they're always chasing you. The bigger the baddies, the more like orbs they'll drop. And so you get like faster upgrades kind of thing too. Honestly, I don't think I can describe it any better than like a Doom infused Vampire Survivors. You know, I keep going back to that, but you do have different characters to unlock and choose from. Each of them kind of like specialize in their own different weapons or things. There's like handguns, shotguns, wizard wands, swords. There's other weapons you could pick up along the way. There's like bombs, there's bear traps, there's like little spider companions. One of the deadliest weapons, the frying pan, that you can pick up as well, too. I thought this was kind of neat, actually, because you don't get this in the other ones, too. But you can swap weapons. So say you have like a like an offhand weapon, like a machete or something. You can swap that if you're in close combat with like dual revolvers, you know, or whatever your other weapon was. You know, there's a ton of weapons. So I'm just going over like some of the basic ones, too. And then you can set things up as well, which I thought was nice. Between like an auto fire and like an aim and shoot mechanic. So you can really play it, I mean, honestly, as like a run and gun, you know, style game, or you can play it as just like a runner, you know, an auto shooter. So I thought that was kind of neat too. You'll also collect coins in the levels as well, which outside of the levels can be used to spend money and like gain permanent upgrades for your character stats or weapons. Overall theme of the game is very like ancient, spooky, kind of demonic cult vibe, you know. Levels are all kind of set up in like a twisting labyrinth as well too. There's a little bit of story progression in there too, where you're like fighting hordes of enemies and then you're learning about like this evil ancient cult that's like summoning, you know, ancient demons. It's got cool retro pixel graphics, tons of cool weapons, lots of replayability here. You know, overall, it's a good game, you know?
Soundtrack good in it?
Soundtrack is great in it, yes.
Nice.
I would say soundtrack is awesome, man. But good. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I just played like a lot of these similar style games, but yeah, it's fun, you know. It's got a, you know, I'm always addicted to like roguelikes or like, you know, anything that has replayability, you know, here. So yeah. I like it.
Well, it is $12.99. What are your thoughts on this one?
Ooh, you know, $12.99 is a little steep. I would say maybe like $10.99 maybe, but yeah, no, it's good. Yeah. I would say go ahead and get it. You know, why not? It's fun.
Cool. Next up, Silver Bullet, developed by 1CC Games, published by Flynn's Arcade. Released October 30th, Switch and Steam for $6.99. Reggie the Vampire is dognapping puppies and must be stopped. Goddamn right he needs to be stopped, dognapping puppies. As Van Helsing embark on a journey around the world to rescue the pups from haunted mansions and museums, the ghoulish graveyards. Each stage is packed with unique challenges to overcome and secrets to discover. Purnell, what is going on in Silver Bullet?
Silver Bullet is a pretty snappy little arcade game where you play as Van Helsing, one of his dogs. what I mean by that is you are going, like you said, from level to level, kicking ass, taking names, and saving doggies. The game has a way of actually splitting itself between two types of stages. One being like a sort of bonus E level, where they take the gameplay and kind of slap it into more of a mini game concept for the prospect of getting bonus points. And then there's the actual main levels. And those levels are the core concept of gameplay. On these levels, you are on a single screen, and you are at the bottom of the screen, running from left to right. Enemies are coming in from pretty much all over, honestly. And they are intent on killing you. Some will kind of fly around and shoot bullets. Some will just kind of be there just to soak up shots that could be going to better enemies. And others are just going to kind of aggressively trying to crash into you because they're assholes like that. As Van Helsing, you have a crossbow gun. And that crossbow gun can be aimed with the right thumbstick to target enemies, and then you can fire upon them with the right trigger. While you are firing your gun, though, you are unable to move. So this game is very much a stand and deliver sort of deal. Though you do have the ability to kind of use like a dash button, and you can dash out of the way sometimes, but you can't like side strafe, essentially. There's a parry button.
Comparisons to Wild Guns Reloaded?
Yeah, I can see why, too, because even though Wild Guns is pretty much a background shooter, but even though this one isn't a quote-unquote background shooter, it's the same idea of moving your character at the bottom and moving your cursor to attack the things that are approaching you around you. Whereas that game uses foreground, background sort of stuff. At its core, it's the same concept of move the cursor, cover the overlap thing, shoot thing. So you just don't have to. Basically, the point I'm making is you don't have the depth element that can factor into Wild Guns. As you're killing things, you're getting points. Every once in a while, you might come across an interesting object that might appear on the screen, like a bullseye, where you want to shoot that to get points, or a particular enemy that might drop or crap lots of money. Definitely want to shoot him. As you are shooting enemies, the more accurate you are, the more a particular area value on the left called the accuracy counter will go up. That accuracy counter determines the type of bonus items. This is my understanding. If I was wrong about it, well, then damn, I fucked up. But it determines the sort of bonus item that will appear. So the better your accuracy counter is, the more points you're prone to earn when bonus items drop. The primary way to get bonus items to drop is at a certain point in time when you've killed enough enemies, your trusty canine companion will run up off the side of the screen, at which point you can then hit a new button, the right bumper, to activate your special attack. Special attack being a direct line of fire where the game stops briefly to show you the line of fire that you're about to fire, and then you will shoot your dog, because apparently this dog has got like that, into the fray. And every enemy he bumps into, he kills, unless it's a boss, in which case he just does lots of damage. And a cascade of the bonus item you've unlocked will fall from the sky, which you could then collect them all to acquire delicious points. Eventually, at the end of that level, if you manage to survive that long, a boss will come out, you'll kick the boss's butt, you'll defeat them, save a doggy, get some bonus points, and move on to the next level. The coins you can find from various reasons or through various means can be used to purchase items at the shop when you come across the shop on the stage progression bar. And for the most part, I just kind of described the game. There is a score attack mode, which I think is kind of cool to unlock, where once you've accessed the level, you can go directly to that level and practice on it and get a feel for what the level is like, how to get all the special bonus destructible objects taken out. So that when you do your official full run, you can really go to town and go for the high score, because this game is very much a score chaser. So I think at the end of the day, the price is right and the gameplay is right to give you that kind of quick and fun arcade experience. It's not trying to rewrite anything. It's not trying to set the bar, and it's not trying to do anything special. It's just trying to do something that it knows how to do and does it well. And I think it succeeds at that.
Very good. Clocks in at $7 whopping dollars on Steam and on Switch. What do you think of this one?
I think it's also a buy it. I think it deserves being beyond a fuck it, why not? I don't think I have a hard time using that one now. I don't know what it is, but I do think the game is worth buying if you're down with arcadey gameplay.
I think we're getting harder times to use fuck it, why not? Because we've kind of been stepping away from like the cheap shovelware lately. We try to cover games with at least a little more work put into them than asset flips. Like cutting our ties with AFIL, I am so happy that we did that.
I'll be honest with you, like I don't even think I used it in that way anymore at any point. The way I pretty much used it was to say the game isn't going to really set your wallet back and it's worth a try versus the game is fun and it's cheap. Because if it's fun and it's cheap, it's a buy it. If it's a, yeah, you might or might not like it.
It's a try it, but it's so cheap. Fuck it. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, with that, I could see it being like an $8 game or a tenner. Even a tenner could be a fuck it. Why not for me? But it has to be.
Especially in this economy.
Exactly.
This economy.
proper use of in this economy right there. Yes.
No, the proper 100%. Use of in this economy is the name of our MAGFest panel.
In this economy?
Lumberjacks in this economy?
Yes. Yes.
I feel like that's most games for me now. I've like played so many games. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. Play it or don't. Either way.
Well, I don't give a fuck what you do. What am I, a reviewer? Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Don't give
fuck you and your money. Next up. Money. Next up, we got Blood West. Developed by Hyper Strange, published by New Blood Interactive, finally dropping some games on Xbox. I am pumped about this. This one released October 16th, Series X and S, Xbox, PC, and PS5 for $24.99. The Dead Man's Promise DLC is available for $9.99, and you can get the Dead Man Edition with the game and the DLC for $29.99. Weird West Legends meet Eldritch Horror in Blood West, an immersive stealth FPS. Become the undead gunslinger doomed to roam the barren lands until he manages to purge their curse, freeing his soul. Three varied scenarios, perk-based character progression, and 20-plus hours of gameplay await you. And then there's also the Dead Man's Promise DLC, which offers you a new story chapter of immersive stealth FPS action, the course of which will take you to a familiar place at an unfamiliar time. As Twan's father, you'll have to pay your debt to the God of Death and wrangle lost souls for his herald. Be prepared for another Weird West adventure with new Eldritch Horrors and new weapons to send them back to where they came from. Or Acolyte, tell us about Blood West.
All right. So Blood West is a first-person stealth shooter set during the frontier era of America, or the Wild West, essentially. The land has become cursed. The white man has brought corruption and greed and slaughtered people on holy ground, causing the Great Spirit to abandon the land. Now the souls of the dead cannot rest, causing them to walk the earth as nightmarish creatures. You play as a nameless cowboy who this Native American shaman finds and drags his corpse to a ritual site to help lay his spirit to rest, but it seems someone has other plans for him. So once you die, you end up going to hell, but are resurrected by this entity that talks to you through these skull totems called the Totem of Souls, and they are apparently an amalgamation of souls that knew of your infamous deeds in your past life, making you into an undead warrior for them themselves, essentially, to help purify the rot from the world and free them from the unending cycle of despair.
Cute.
Just a daunting task, no big deal. You unfortunately have no recollection of your past life, but at least you have a purpose now. The game is divided into three chapters and a DLC chapter, each with a distinct area to explore. Like a desert mining town and a murky swamp. The maps are pretty large, being able to visit a number of named areas in each section. So like underground networks of gold mines, an alligator farm, a sawmill, or cults that's got their kind of home base situated inside this giant cave. Each chapter is, like I said, a separate map area, but all your progress from one chapter carries over to the next. I'm not sure about the DLC chapter, though. I haven't got to that one yet. But yeah, so you start off with nothing but $50 and some rocks. Then you get a brief tutorial section at the beginning of the game. Yeah, that's all you need to kill an army of the nightmarish creatures, right?
Yeah, you're good.
Not a problem.
You got it.
So yeah, you have this like brief tutorial section at the beginning. After that, you're completely free to choose where you go next. There are some quests that will direct you to like specific areas of the map, but every location is accessible as long as you think you can survive against enemies that are situated there. Blood West has a major focus on stealth. When you come in close proximity to unaware enemies, there's a detection meter that fills up when making noise or being seen by the enemies. If in direct line of sight, the meter fills up quicker. When filled, certain enemies in the vicinity will start chasing you. There's an eye and ear icon that will appear above the meter to indicate whether the enemies are able to hear or see you. Sometimes it seemed kind of random who would chase you when the meter filled up. there would be some smaller places with enemies patrolling that, and only a couple of them would become alert. And then there'd be other larger grouping of enemies in a separate section that would become aware of your presence. And then like the whole group would start chasing you. And I sometimes couldn't discern like what was the, if there was like a radius or if it was like groups of enemies were kind of latched together as one unit kind of thing. I'm not sure exactly how it worked. Anyways, not too important. So, at least one person's going to be aware of you if it goes, gets full. There's also, essentially, when the meter's filling up, it even fills up when you're crouching near enemies, as long as you're crouch walking, essentially. So you will have to stop from time to time if you want the meter to cool down a bit so you're not seen. You do also have an infinite number of rocks that can be used to distract foes if you want them to kind of change up their patrol pattern. If you do happen to be seen, you can run, but be mindful as you have a stamina bar with a reasonable but limited amount of stamina. The first weapon you get is a rusty axe, and as you may have guessed, using melee weapons will drain your stamina. Melee weapons have a basic and secondary heavy attack. You also get an assortment of other weapons right away, like a pistol, shotgun, and knife, with a fair spread of other ones that be acquired throughout the game, like crossbows, rifles, and throwing axes. There are also multiple types of ammo you can get, like standard, silver, gold, or flammable bullets, along with multiple types of crossbow bolts. The better quality ammo, though, is quite rare, so you use it very sparingly. you can come across some also like interesting special weapons. Like there's a drunken master rifle that does more damage when you're drunk, but you lose stamina if you miss while you're shooting it. Or this saber that deals quite a bit of damage, but if you miss an attack with it, you'll start bleeding because it's so sharp, essentially. That's why? I thought that was quite flavorful. It's called the Edge, I think, is the name of the weapon.
Nice.
Your character gonna have two weapons equipped at a time, along with three consumable slots for health items, throwables, or potions and alcohol. There are also three artifact slots, which are essentially accessories that provide static bonuses like increased damage or experience gain. Some artifacts will be cursed, though, giving you a negative drawback as well. Such as certain enemy types dealing more damage to you or decreased damage output from yourself, or not being able to be unequipped until you die. So be mindful of that. There's a solid variety of enemies, ranging from ghoulish zombies that'll lunge at you just to try and claw at you, human centipedes that spit acid, the Wraith, which is like the spectral gunslinger guy, and then one of my favorites, the Skin Collector. This hulking zombie thing that chases you around with an axe in one hand, a knife in the other hand, and has these severed heads attached to his belt. And then he also drops, if you kill him, he has like this cool accessory you can get called the Face Scalp. It's this like peel-off face that gives you a damage resistance and makes items cost more from vendors. And some of the... There's a bit of humor in this game, most of which I would say comes in the form of the item descriptions. Like for the Face Scalp, for example, says, "The stench is almost unbearable, but you feel safer while wearing it. Probably won't make you very popular among others, though." I love that one. But yeah, there's a few of them that are pretty good like that. They're very flavorful, too, given the type of item it is. Killed enemies, drop a variety of loot, weapons, ammo, artifacts, health, pretty much anything that you can find in the game has the potential to be dropped by enemies. Usually specific items will drop from specific enemy types, though. You do have a pretty large inventory capacity, although if you're a loot hoarder like myself, it probably won't feel like enough. Every enemy killed also gives you experience. Once you level up, you get skill points that can be used to purchase from a wide array of skills. Pretty standard bonuses like increased health, stamina, damage, or a few other slightly more uncommon ones like deadly precision, which gives you the ability to slightly slow down time when aiming down sights, or blood carnage, which helps you restore stamina automatically when you're making kills.
Carnage, is he into that?
This isn't a twin stick shooter. Carnage isn't interested in it. If you die, you respawn at the most recently visited Totem of Souls. Dying also grants you a curse, which is essentially a debuff that persists until you use a specific, somewhat scarce potion to remove its effect, or you visit a Totem of Souls to complete a quest that helps you remove the effect. You can only do the quest, though, if you've died three times after or two more times after getting the curse, essentially, because each time you die, the curse levels up once, up to three levels. Some of the negative effects you get will be like decreased experience gain, drastically decreased stamina or health. You can have four active curses at once. So yeah, try not to die. each map, I should also mention that some of the quests to like do for the removal of the curses isn't too difficult. I think one of the harder ones I had was one that required you to kill five enemies with fire damage, essentially. And if you don't have a lot of fire items on you, or like Molotovs or flame bullets, like that's going to be a little challenging to do. You're going to have to hunt for a while to get some of those or buy them. But other than that, most of them are pretty reasonable to get rid of the curses. Each map has a couple safe zones, areas where enemies won't pursue you, and you can rest to regain health. One of these zones on each map will also have a stash you can store an unlimited number of items in, so you don't have to be like too worried about what to throw away. You can always come back to the safe zone and drop off stuff. This same area will also have a totem of souls and a vendor you can buy and sell stuff from. So this is a kind of a key one for the game. When you die or rest, certain enemies will have the potential to respawn. If you're lucky, though, there is an equipable artifact you can find that stops them from respawning. It's extremely useful, especially if you're having problems clearing a specific area out. But yeah, once you get that, if you happen to find it, yeah, I'd say it changes up the game quite a bit. But yeah, there is a bit of a story in Blood West, mostly told through brief interactions with NPCs and notes for item descriptions. But I would say you're mostly playing this game for the combat and exploration. Like the lore wasn't that in depth, in my opinion. Most of the quests are just fetch quests, go to a location, find something. All of them kind of boiling down to being able to access a final boss for the area you're in. Like the main quest for the first map, for example, you're searching for cursed items for the Totem of Souls. Some of the items have little stories to go along with them, like a golden pot someone crafted that was their prized possession. Eventually, it would drive them insane, causing them to cook human meat in it. So you'll find like traces of. Sorry?
Cute?
Yeah, you'll find traces of like, this is where like kind of Lovecraftian element comes into play. Like other than nightmarish creatures, you'll find traces of like humans that have just gone insane from, you know, seeing all the nightmarish stuff in the environment. And then they'll kind of become these crazed individuals themselves. Other than that, though, I wouldn't really call it too much of a Lovecraftian game. Very somewhat mild, I guess. But yeah, for the most part, I've been having a pretty fun time with Blood West. I did find this like excellent axe early on. So like most of the time I'm just like creeping around the shadow, sneaking up on unsuspecting foes, giving them a good whack to the head, which like explodes their head clean off. Nice. Then you just kind of rinse and repeat. And then usually the only time I'm switching to like a shotgun or like a type of range weapon to blast large enemies away is like if someone happens to see me, are one of the smaller enemies is unfortunate enough to spot me chopping off one of the heads of their companions. I'd say they don't want to get blasted away by a shotgun. It's not a fun time. Yeah, the art style in this game is pretty good, especially the enemies. I would say the enemy design is probably my favorite part of that. Up close, you can see the flattened pixelated textures, but at a distance, everything looks really clean. The map is fun to explore, but the only real reward to exploring is finding rare ammo or unique weapons.
Unique.
There wasn't really
for that.
Oh, probably. I could slip in a couple more times if she wants me to. But, I didn't feel like there was much added flavor or story for the exploration, other than maybe like a couple exceptions with some notes and stuff, but. Yeah, for the most part, you're playing for the killing and exploration, I would say. There are three difficulties to play on. I played the game on normal mode, which said it was the intended way to experience the game. On normal, I wouldn't say it was very difficult, although you still probably will die a fair amount since enemies hit like trucks in this game. There'll be like a couple enemies where a few hits and you're just dead. Yeah. Like I said, other than the curses, I don't think there was really any punishment for dying, though. So as long as you're persistent, or if you get that ring early on, like I mentioned, then yeah, I'd say it's pretty smooth sailing with a little bit of persistence. I should note for Xbox Achievement Hunters, though, although I like this feature, I know most people will hate it. On story mode, the difficulty, on story mode, all achievements are disabled, except for the story-based achievements. So if you want to get all the achievements, you will need to play on normal or higher. There also might be some glitched achievements. There was one, for example, that said headshot 100 people, or kill 100 people with headshots, one or the other, and I'm pretty sure I'm way past that, and I never got that. So, and then there was a couple other ones that looked like they might be glitched as well, but... but yeah, so yeah, be worried about the story mode canceling your achievements. So,
all right, well, and yeah, let's talk price on this one. Clocks in at $24.99. New Blood finally releasing games on Xbox. You excited?
Yeah, I have always eyed their games from afar on Steam, and finally, nice a chance to pick one up and actually test it for myself.
Sweet. $25. Give us a verdict.
I would say it's at very least a try. It probably lean more towards a buy it for me. The only caveat to that would be if you're going in expecting like a lore rich game, I would probably put it at a try it. But if you're like you're just kind of want to, you know, stealthily move around and like kill guys in the Wild West. I thought the gunplay and combat and exploration was pretty good overall, but yeah, not much lore wise. So I'd put it at a buy it myself, but beware of those things.
Cool. All right. We got one last game to talk about. Are you going to stick around or are you heading out for that?
I'll stick around.
All right. Well, then let's get to it. We got one last game. It is a preview of Fractured Blooms, developed and published by Serenity Forge. Demo is out now on Steam. Cool game coming when it's good and ready. Play as Angie, a teenage girl who finds herself stuck in a time loop in a world that is soft and still. Every loop is a strategic game of resource management and discovery. Plan each day carefully to manage your food and stamina. Only by mastering your routine and finding ways around challenging tasks can you dig deeper into the blessed reality around you. Something will shift with each new day. You'll begin to notice. You'll begin to remember. You'll begin to see. You'll begin to feel. I don't believe that Aki doesn't have feelings. Your actions matter. Your actions always matter. And the cycle always remembers. Aki, what is going on in Fractured Blooms?
First and foremost, I do have feelings. Horny is a feeling. Okay, so fuck off.
All right, you've got one feeling.
Pissy, that's the second one. See, I'm doing okay. I got at least two. I'm doing fine, okay? I have just as many as a baby does. I'm okay.
She's got three. One's very specific to Jacob, though. It's just Jacob.
Yeah, it's called that asshole. Damn it. So, yeah, in this, you play a anime girl in a realistic world because... I don't know. And you wake up, she starts talking to herself saying, oh, normal day, I gotta go do this. And then you go do it. And then she's like, okay, now I have to go do this. And you do it. And that keeps going on. Basically, she has you go pick a tomato, put it into a basket, and then grab some seeds to plant a new type of plant. Then put the seeds back, grab a watering can, go water it. Almost every one of these actions takes away some of your energy, to which you have 10 total that you can have. You start off with 4 in this demo, and then you go to sleep, and you wake up the next day, and you're told to go out and go do it all over again. After you bring it in, the food in, you actually go into the house that's right next to you, and she prepares food, and weird stuff happens, like the TV suddenly flipped on for me while I was in the middle of it, and I had to go turn that off because it was fucking irritating. And she's like, okay, now count to 30 after we put this on, and dinner will be ready. And she also comments about how food just appears in the place. Even the meat, sometimes it's venison, sometimes it's beef, sometimes it's other stuff. And then after she's done setting food up, she doesn't eat for some reason. It behaves kind of like there's other people there, even though there aren't, because she's like, oh, now we set it here and everyone can eat, but there's literally no one in the house but her. And then she goes about doing chores and she's like, no matter how quickly I get this done, it just sucks all the energy out of me and it's never done. So you go around, you collect some laundry, toss into the washing machine, and then you go to sleep. However, you only have a certain amount of time to get that laundry done. And you have to go throughout the house to find all the different pieces of laundry. And for every like 30 seconds left on your timer, you get one energy back. So you very quickly start to run out of energy. And then you start the next day with however much energy you have at the end. And it just slowly runs out. And by that, I mean in this demo, it almost immediately runs out. But the second day, she wakes up, she tells you to do the exact same things, because it is a time loop. But then you hear another voice other than just her saying, hey, no, don't listen to her. Plant flowers instead of like the beets that she's telling you to plant. And then it's up to you on whether you actually do it or not. And then you eventually you start running out of energy and then you can't actually do everything that you're told to do. But more of the surrounding area also becomes available to you. So you maybe explore around and you see a broken down bus there. Oh, and by the way, in the where you were going to plant the plants, there's some weird thing growing there. But that's irrelevant, really. And then while you're leaving the bus, suddenly you see through someone else's eyes as your character's walking away. And then if you're me, you immediately turn around once you have access to the character and there's no one there. And it's like, it's one of those types of games. Fuck my life. And then you're told, oh, yeah, you need to get inside because it's not safe out here anymore. It's nighttime. You need to go in. It's time to eat and stuff. So get inside. And if you take too long to get inside, bad things happen, so you better get inside. You start hearing things clamoring after you on the roof and stuff, and you get inside. And then the narrator starts talking as though nothing just happened again. She's like, okay, well, now it's time to make dinner. I'm like, but what about the fucking noise? What's with the butt? What the fuck? And then shit just starts very quickly going wrong, because this day everything starts falling apart. And then not long after, the demo ends, because this is like a 45-minute demo, sadly. There's not a whole bunch to it.
It is a very short demo, and I believe, if we were told right, you can only play it once.
That's what they told us. I didn't try it again after that. So I'll have to try it again and see. I'm not sure. It seemed like I'd be able to play it again if I wanted, but
Some of the reviews on Steam, like the early word of mouth, people are saying the creepiest game I ever actually played. Fracture Blooms is the scariest game I played at IGN Live. Is this a creepy game?
It is a little creepy. It gives you, especially on that second day, and if you get to a third day, the third day, it gets really weird because the world starts to change around her. Like, you start seeing, on the very first night, in her room, there is a fractal thing that's like eating a corner of her room that just has weird colors and shit in it. Like, it's going into the unknown universe or some bullshit. And every day it grows and other stuff similar to it also starts growing around the farmland. And it seems to be eating everything up and maybe the cause of all the weird shit that's going on. Like whatever that thing was that started trying to get you as you needed the head inside that day. That probably came from the bus. I have a feeling just from how this game plays and everything, I have a feeling that it's going to end up being like the character is maybe like in a coma or something, and you're trying to play the game to get her to wake up or some shit, would be my guess.
No, we will find out when the full game is ready to go. We have no information on a release window, but the demo is up on Steam right now. I will read the mature content description, because I don't know if all this is in the demo or not. I'm guessing they're saving the good stuff for later. But it says, this game is not for those who are easily disturbed. Player discretion is advised. Fracture Blooms includes themes of psychological distress, grief, trauma, and mental illness. Players may encounter unsettling imagery, blood, and scenes involving the implied harm towards others. Again, the game demo is on Steam now. Aki, should people check it out? Should they wish list it? Should they ignore it? Do you grab the demo to this, or do you want to like stay in the dark?
Oh, I think you should grab the demo just so you see how the game plays, because it isn't it. I'm not saying the word. It's different.
It's unique, right?
Fuck you. Yes, it is. I hate you. So I think you should definitely try it. And again, it's like it'll take you less than an hour to get through it, because I don't think you can actually make it past like the third day. I think the second day you don't have enough energy to complete that day properly. So that's kind of the point. I think it's definitely worth picking that up. See if you like it. I think it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. If you like the demo, then obviously wishlist it, because it's, I have a feeling it's going to be very much this, just more and extra. So yeah, I'm personally, I can't wait for this to come out. This forever ago on one of the fucking shows where they were showing all the different new upcoming games, and I was like, oh, this looked cool. And this demo has just made me feel that just all the more. So I'm
speaking
I'm
of showing new up and coming games, something we're going to talk about on the next episode was the IGN ID at Xbox showcase. And, Serenity Forge of Fractured Blooms fame is also releasing Poppergeist.
Yep.
Oh no.
It is a unique blend of rhythm gameplay and visual novel storytelling that will tug at your heartstrings. In this heartfelt and whimsical adventure, you'll play as Claire, a young witch on a journey to find her lost pup in the doggy underworld. And it looks really, really adorable, and I can't wait for that one to come out either.
I feel like this may have just come out on Steam, actually. I'm not sure. But I think I played the demo of this forever ago.
I don't know. This just says to be announced and coming soon. So, on that note, we are done with this episode. We made it through without taking 5 hours, which is very good.
Damn.
Only around two this time. I'll deal with it.
Not bad.
Big thanks to Horror Acolyte, Aki, Purnell, and Sperry for being here till the end. Thanks to Bree for coming on, hanging out in the beginning, tackling a couple of games. She will be on next episode as well with more video game talk. We're going to wrap it up. Keep the Halloween spirit going with some one-ups. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Yes, jiggle physics are the best physics.
If you had a bullet hell that was cozy, what would make it cozy?
Not being a bullet hell.
Like it would be called a bullet heaven, I guess is its own thing.
You like collect bullets?
Being shot by pillows.
There you go.
I mean, bullet heavens actually are games.
No, that's what I was saying. That's which is actually a thing. So I might have to rethink that. But that's what I'm saying. Like I'm trying to think myself. I guess it would be
vampire survivors.
No, that's I know what bullet. I'm saying. I was saying the inverse of hell, but the game genre exists. So I got to rethink the name. So I can't think of a good name now.
Pew Pew Happy Place.
Was the obvious one. What would be called the bullet happy place?
Pew pew happy pew, place.
Pew pew happy like, place. I like that
know,
actually.
I want to know what the style would be.
Pew pew
heaven. Bullet hell, there's like thousands of bullets coming at you all at once. Would a cozy bullet hell be just like one?
No, it'd
one?
Be the opposite. You would be the boss and you would be firing 50 billion bullets at tiny little things and just wiping.
There's just like one.
Actually, I would say, I think it's more like what Horror Acolyte was going for. Instead, all the bullets are coming at you, but you want to be hit by as many as possible because the bullets are something you want. Hearts like, or something.
Yeah.
Pillows.
You're ready.
One of the games you're like trying if somebody, to get to sleep. If, someone just
yeah. If I was in a bed and people start shooting dollar bills at me, I want to get hit by as many of them as I can and collect that shit. Give me all the money. There you go.
I like it.
You just need better core strength in the start pole dance, and you'll be fine.
No, that's
you like Katamari Damacy. Start with a small ball, work your way up.
There it is. Now we're talking.
There we go.
Roll it all.
Jacob knows
up.
About small balls.
Roll it up.
Oh, poor Jake.